From Austin Film Festival, this is On Story, a look inside the creative process from today's leading creators, writers, and filmmakers. I'm your host, Barbara Morgan. This week on Story, we'll hear from screenwriter and producer Phil Hay. He co-wrote a 2019 Los Angeles crime drama, Destroyer, which starred Nicole Kidman. In 2015, Hay made the horror film The Invitation. The film follows a man as he becomes increasingly suspicious of his ex-wife's motives while attending a dinner party hosted at their old house. Hay spoke about the film at the Austin Film Festival with moderator Maya Perez. Clips of The Invitation, courtesy of Game Changer Films and Film Buff. Clips of Destroyer, courtesy of 30 West and Annapurna Pictures.
We're going to talk about The Invitation. And before we get to Karin coming on board, what were the seeds for this movie?
So the seeds for The Invitation, it was like a long time ago too. So both Destroyer and The Invitation are movies that Matt and I thought of the basics of 8 to 10 years before we made them. So they were something that really were haunting us and staying with us for a long time. But The Invitation, and I think this is instructive, at least for me, about understanding how I think about movies, is everyone approaches it differently from a different angle. And I always, in some ways, have to think of the theme first, which I have to understand what questions are worth kind of really digging into and what kind of concerns are really important. And so I think with The Invitation, it was a question. I remember having the conversation with Matt and thinking the idea of like, what if you knew someone really well and you loved them and you knew them, in fact, better than anyone, and they just went away one day, and when they walked back through the door, they were a completely different person. What would that feel like? What would that be, and why?
Did you worry about me? Did you think about me?
Yeah. I did.
Well, I'm fantastic. I've never been better. You don't have to worry about me anymore.
You don't find it hard to be in this house again?
No, not at all. It doesn't have to be. That's what's so incredible.
You look different, Edie.
I am different. I'm free. All that useless pain, it's gone. It's something anyone can have, Will. And I want you to have it too.
So we had that, and then, like most original scripts, I think, is like there was a confluence of things in our lives and ideas, intellectual ideas, and both of us had gone through a period of intense grief, losing people, and so grief was really much on our minds, and in Matt's case specifically, how people expect you to deal with grief and how expectations, how there's this sense of being looked at all the time and the inability to do the right thing somehow in people's minds, and the ability to just to work, to do the work of grief. And so we started talking about this idea of what if there were people who thought that grief and pain were optional? What if they thought that you could mind power your way out of the bad feelings that come with being a human being? And what would the toll of that be? So then we had that piece. And then we also realized we're both really obsessed with cults. And so obviously those things kind of go together. And those were the basics, and we knew how to tell a Los Angeles story, and Manson haunts LA, and Jim Jones haunts California, and so we were really in that sort of way of thinking. So in a way, it kind of came from feelings, and then we kind of found the story.
So you said that you're thinking about what would happen if this person goes, you know, goes away, and how does grief affect you, and they come back, and they're a new person, and that's both Eden and Will. He does not belong with this group of people.
What can I get you to drink?
No, I'm good.
I go with the wine. It's an 85 Rothschild.
Are you kidding me?
Okay, what does that mean?
Oh, Will, you're adorable.
It's like $8 million a bottle, Cro-Mag.
Well, this night is special. We shouldn't save these things. We shouldn't put off enjoying what we have.
You sure?
I'm good.
Yes. Thank you.
They both kind of feel like aliens, and I think that was the idea. I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I think that character, the idea was that he was maybe always a little bit outside. You know, the tension of that story is there's people trying to embrace him some of them are trying to embrace him for the right reasons, and some of them are trying to embrace him to kill him, basically. And that was a big part of the storytelling process of that movie, is figuring out how to create a character who, as the protagonist, who was really apart from everyone, and who wanted to be, or who needed to be apart, because he couldn't reintegrate, that it was too difficult for him to reintegrate with these people after the experience that he was the center of.
The grief in this film is so palpable, but I just remember the first time I saw this movie, I just sobbed. It was too heartbreaking.
I mean, I think hopefully, especially movies that have some sort of an element of horror or science fiction or cop thriller or any of those things, I think part of the reason we're drawn to them is because, to me, you can get to the most primal things in a surprising manner sometimes through those stories. I mean, there are certain things that they do that are categorically bad, but to try to understand how people get to the place where they're so desperate that they will do anything to escape the pain that they're in, including denying the humanity of other people. And when you do a movie that is violent with The Invitation, which is a very dark movie in some ways, the most important thing to us was that it wasn't nihilistic, that the people were human and that they made mistakes. And in a weird way, we always looked at the story of The Invitation as a tragedy about Eden, that's really what the story is, that Will is the protagonist. But the story is her tragedy, because she actually understands by the end that she was wrong. Mm-hmm. And the need was very, very basic, is just to be with her family again. That's what she wanted.
Will goes to this dinner party, and it's what he winds up getting from this that he didn't have before, is a will to live.
Yeah.
And it's an invitation. I mean, I felt like, to him, to rejoin the living.
That was what he needed to do, was to return to the living, and to decide that it was worth living, and to decide that hopefully what you get out of the movie is that his decision is to, when faced with horror, is to turn to other people, to believe that people care about him, and to believe that he matters and other people matter, and that's the only way through, is to, and that he's uniquely equipped to, as someone who has really suffered, to help people through the literal and metaphorical things that are happening in the movie.
So I want to talk about the opening scene, which, just to remind people, that was where Will and Kira, his girlfriend, are driving to the party and they hit a coyote.
Maybe they're overcompensating. It's kind of hard to call everybody up out of the blue after 2 years.
Nobody seen her?
I ran into her and David at a supermarket, and a little bit after that, I heard they disappeared.
And they met in the grief group?
Mm-hmm. While we were still married. Yeah, I guess you could have put odds on our divorce.
No. People don't think like that.
Yes, they do.
No, they don't.
Yes, they do. Jesus.
What was that?
It's a coyote, I think.
And then he gets out, takes a shovel from the trunk of the car, and it's a mercy killing. And what to you was the significance? What did that establish for the film?
It's funny because in some ways, when we've talked about it afterwards, it seems like pretty direct and pretty direct line, and there always is there. But in a weird way, we didn't think about it in those terms as much as we thought about the basic thing being that he is understanding that there's a creature in pain, and that he is actually responsible for its pain, and he's trying to help it out of its misery, which we position it in the movie as he's doing the responsible thing. But then that instinct is perverted by the people who are part of this movement that thinks they're erasing everyone's pain and taking them to the promised land. But in a way, the more subtle part of it that I realized after doing it was what we needed out of that scene was to also show people that Will was, because he's so recessive and he's so troubled, one thing we learned from that scene is that he is the kind of person that is willing to take responsibility. He's the kind of person that's willing to do the hard thing, and he's equipped to do the hard thing, because it's a pretty hard thing to do to go to your trunk and get a tire iron and kill an animal, but he knows it has to be done. And so I felt that was an opportunity to learn something about that person without that person having to speak about it. And then when it's brought up in the party and people are horrified or interested, or that he's embarrassed, he doesn't want to talk about it. So I think that we realized there was an opportunity to show his character by putting him in that weird situation. And also, coyotes are such an important icon in Los Angeles, at least in my Los Angeles. We did, in some ways, think of it in a slightly technical manner of saying, like, something has to happen that triggers your attention in some way. But we needed that little moment in the beginning, something that sets you a little bit at dis-ease. Like, I don't know if it would have worked as well if we never had that jolt at the beginning. And it's kind of the only thing that's like it in the movie. It's the only thing that could be called a jump scare in a way.
How did you fill out the rest of the dinner party guests? Like, when you're thinking about how many should we have, what do they represent to, you know, to Will or to Eden?
So there was definitely some sort of meta part of it, but it was really trying to figure out then who these people were to each other and what combination, what might have brought them together and what tore them apart. But we wanted it to be, and again, to talk about, like, interesting when you talk about genre movies or movies that fit into a genre in some way. And I think we're in a period that's so amazing because so many movies that are in the genre space are also, quote, prestige movies, are also, those things are combined. I think more and more people are realizing that you can do so much within these types of stories. But, like, we were always thinking, too, about, okay, we don't want to do a movie that's a horror movie where only the couple survives at the end.
I've heard some interviews where we've talked about the sort of the manners in the screenplay that everyone's very... It's not just a matter, I think, of, like, politeness, but of social mores and how we deal with grief, how we deal with other people experiencing grief, what do we think are the proper ways to behave around it. But also, when you're at a dinner party or in a situation where things are starting to head south, and at what point do you cut out?
One of the funny things about when the movie came out, like, talking to people about it, was how many people hate dinner parties. I was like, I like dinner parties. I mean, like, someone's making you a meal and you're talking to people, but I just sort of learned they seem to be like a nightmare situation for lots of people. We definitely thought of the desire to not be the problem and the desire to not be the one who's the wet blanket or to, like, be transgressive. And, like, that thing, and socially, it's very transgressive to say, I'm not into this, I'm leaving. And because it really breaks it, especially if the stakes are higher, if this gathering is supposed to be important and cathartic, it's really hard to do that. I mean, there's this book that I read, it actually really after we did the movie, but it's called The Gift of Fear. And it's sort of about how, as humans, we have taught ourselves to really tamp down our animal instincts that tell us this is a bad situation. We don't do that because we start to rationalize our way that it's probably okay. And that's because it's helpful for societies to have people reacting that way. But in individual situations, I think we were intrigued in talking about that in the case of The Invitation, of, like, it's really weird what's going on, but it couldn't be too weird where you just have to leave. And it's funny, some people will say about the movie, I would have left, like, the second that video came on, I would have left.
So you brought up Destroyer. And I have a 13-year-old daughter. When your child is so young, your greatest fear is that they'll die before you or prematurely. And you cover that grief and explore it in The Invitation. And then in Destroyer, I just thought it was really interesting for me personally to be watching it when she was now a teenager and realizing that there might even be a greater fear than them dying. Mm. And that is that you just f*** up as a parent. I'd love to hear from you where the story came from and where Aaron Bell came from.
Well, we wanted to tell a story about atonement, that was kind of the word that kept coming up, and that we love cop movies, and specifically love cop movies of the 70s, so there was just a feeling of, like, I would really love to tell an LA cop story. And if you've seen the movie, forgive me if you haven't, the central kind of bank heist sequence. There's the bank heist, and then it rolls into the street, and then it rolls into this, like, knockdown, drag-out fight in this ice cream shop, which, strangely, is something that I witnessed as a child, crazily. Like, I was in an ice cream shop, and this woman came in looking really tweaked out, but I remember I was, like, 7 years old, and I'm, like, in the movie, I'm the little boy that's, like, that represents me, who's, like, in that scene. And it was indelible. And I was like, this person is both so, obviously something's wrong with her, but she was really like powerful, like, you know, like a really like iconic image almost. And then these two, like two guys who I only very much later learned were undercover cops came in and they just started fighting, like really fighting in a way that if you've never seen like people fight, it's really weird and brutal. And she was like beating the shit out of them for a while. So it's like, anyway, so I had that, this thing, and it was just lurking back there. And I was like, that is part of something. And then when we started thinking of this bank heist sequence, I was like, oh, that the way that when you're a writer, you don't know when these things are gonna come up. And we were looking, we knew it had to evolve. And so we're like, oh, that's, I was like, Matt, you know the story that I've told? And he's like, yes, I don't wanna hear it again. I've heard it so many times. I'm like, that could be the thing. And he's like, finally a use for that story, you know? But there isn't a reason for that story to us if it's not a woman. And that was what gave us all of our momentum to think of, oh, because her relationship with her daughter is really what the movie's about. And as you said, it's about the fear that you're, on some level, that you're the bad guy. That's what this movie's about. Or that you're, and how hard it is for an adult to admit that they're wrong to their child. And that so much, you know, the change that she has to go through is to accept responsibility. That she spends the whole movie trying to, very cleverly, the way she has her whole life, dodge responsibility and erase the things that are going to incriminate her and feel justified to do anything because she has had it so hard, to come to the realization that, no, I've been taking out everything that's wrong with me on you.
It's my fault that he died. It's my fault that other people died.
What?
I'm not good. I'm the one who's bad. It's not you. All right? I'm sorry for lying to you. I lied. I stole. And worse.
We had some freedom because the truth of the story that you don't know for a while is that she's operating completely out of line and completely out of bounds and completely wrongly. But you don't want the audience to think that you just don't know what the hell you're talking about with cops. So it's a really tough balance. Like, for example, if you watch the movie a second time, the way she handles that bank robbery is utterly wrong. I mean, it's completely wrong for many reasons. But in retrospect, you realize it's because her motive is not to do good police work. Her motive is to kidnap the person. She's got an opportunity to do something. And she's also driven by, we talked with Nicole a lot about, seeing someone inside a bank with guns pulled on is obviously like triggers everything that has unraveled her. So she can't act in a tactical manner. That's not in her at that moment. She is a very specific type of person, and that to us raised the tension. Like, she's in over her head when she's doing that, and she acquits herself pretty well. It was all about that character. And uniquely for us in that movie, it so revolves around her, and in that it's both really clarifying and also very daunting, because that character has to carry everything, all the values of the movie, basically.
She just feels like such a tragic Greek figure. It's like no matter how she tries to fix this, she can't.
Yeah.
But I also thought what was interesting about her as a mother is while she might not be the mother you want to live with on a daily basis, you know, she's not going to be making you lunch, she's not going to be helping you with homework.
Right.
At the same time, when goes down, it's not bad to have her.
Yeah, and I think that was such an important part for us. I mean, there's something to having a mom that is very powerful and strong, and she's unfortunately used that power for bad things. There's a scene at the end of the movie where you see the kind of primal moment of their relationship, where it's a story that Shelby tells her about being lost in the woods in the snow and being truly lost overnight. And then you kind of see that at the very end as her just carrying her daughter through the snow, which is the best part of her.
You wanna know the one thing that I remembered with the shrink.
What?
I mean, I don't even know if it actually happened or not, but, I was maybe 7, and you had come and got me from school early. Said we were camping, like a surprise camping trip. So we went up in the mountains, and this huge snowstorm came in, and we didn't have the right gear, and we got lost trying to go back to our car. Did it actually happen?
Yeah.
How long were we lost?
Overnight.
Nicole was saying, this is the scene that when I first read it, I just broke into tears. And I knew why this image of just a mom and her daughter and everything that's going to happen in the future, but that's the part that is really ancient. In a way, like, I think what I've realized in every time we write a movie with Destroyer, The Invitation, the movies that we try to make with Karin, we're always looking for the ancient part of the story. Like, what is the thing that is just the primal human core that we're trying to get to?
Did you know from the beginning, before you even started writing, that you were going to start at the end?
Yeah, I think we did, and then we played around a little bit with, like, saying, do we really, does it have to be this?
Right.
Does it have to be a circle? Because we were suspicious of ourselves. We're like, is that just a thing that sounds like a good idea, and then you do it because it's a good idea, or is it essential? And I think we eventually decided it was essential because on a thematic level, we were like, it makes sense to us because this is the story about a cop who's investigating herself. Mm-hmm. That's what the story is. And both on a literal and metaphorical level. So it justified it. It less justified it, it made us think, oh, maybe that's why we did that in the first place. That was the generous to ourselves. We're like, oh, we did it because we somehow understood. But I think it felt necessary to us for those reasons. And that her journey was right back to herself and was ultimately completed by her recognizing that she was the person she's been, quote, hunting for the whole time.
Mm-hmm. On Story is part of a growing number of programs in Austin Film Festival's On Story project, including the On Story PBS series, the On Story radio program and podcast, and the On Story book series. To find out more about On Story and Austin Film Festival, visit onstory.tv or austinfilmfestival.com. On Story is brought to you in part by the Alice Kleberg Reynolds Foundation, a Texas family providing innovative funding since 1979. This project is supported in part by the Cultural Arts Division of the City of Austin Economic Development Department, the Texas Commission on the Arts, the U.S. Institute of Museum and Library Services, and the National Endowment for the Arts, on the web at arts.gov. This program is also made possible in part by a grant from Humanities Texas, the state affiliate for the National Endowment for the Humanities. This podcast is presented by Final Draft. The show is produced by myself, Barbara Morgan, and Katie Turner. Our associate producers are Colin Heyer and Maya Perez. Our editors are Jamal Knox and Travis Neely. Audio capture by Travis Kennedy. Music is by Brian Ramos. Production assistance comes from Sound Lab, Inc., Travis Kennedy, and KUT 90.5 in Austin. Go to austinfilmfestival.com to find out more about the Austin Film Festival and Conference each October. Until next time, I'm Barbara Morgan, and this has been Austin Film Festival's On Story.